This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And we're joined by Shen Hussain. Welcome, Shen.
Hi, it's great to be back.
Yeah, Isabel. And you're not, you're certainly not a stranger to Talking of Books. And also, you absolutely love young adult books, even though you are also someone who reads everything you can get your hands on.
I read everything, but I specifically love fantasy. And so in fantasy, I think across every genre is, you know, it's still amazing. In fact, I probably slightly prefer children's fantasy to adult fantasy because I do feel that it's often better written.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the book that we're looking at today for young adults and adults, I would say, is by Terry Terry, and it's Contagion. It's the beginning of another, I assume it's a trilogy.
It is a trilogy. Yes. It's called, I think, the Dark Matter trilogy.
Yes. And I couldn't put it down. You know, it's one of those books that you sort of start it I want to know what's happening. And you are left, as we talked about earlier, Penny, because it's a trilogy.
I'm crushed.
She keeps you hanging.
You're left hanging. There's so many questions.
But the first thing I did once I'd finished reading it was to find out when the other two are coming out.
And it's 2018. Yeah. Yeah, it's just come out now, Contagion.
But fortunately, the other two are both coming out in 2018, so I don't have to hold on for too long.
Now, I'm going to release a quiz question. And this one, the lucky winner, who is picked out of the magic sorting hat by Elaine, will get a copy of Contagion by Terry Terry. It's just been published, and I know we have a copy back in the office. And in fact, I've got two copies given to me. I don't know how, so I shall be returning one of those, even if Chrissy hasn't got one in her little bookshelf. All you have to do is name one contagious disease that has been eradicated globally. It's been confirmed by the WHO that this disease has been eradicated. One contagious disease that is no longer, it's been around for 3,000 years, but I think it was in the late 1980s. It was announced the last cases and it's been eradicated completely. Text in your answers. What is the one contagious disease that no longer exists, apart from in laboratories, which are the... Scary thing. We just need the name of the disease and your name as well. And text in your answers to 4001 and we will choose a lucky winner to get a copy of Contagion.
I think that would be a really difficult question to answer because although so many diseases you think have been eradicated, they've started coming back because you
have... There is only one that has been eradicated.
So there's only one correct answer
there
in this
only
one.
There is only one correct answer. Yes, yeah.
Interesting. Are we allowed to talk about it or our guesses or
no?
It's going to spoil
you
it.
Can't guess. Can you guess? No.
We can talk about it where we're not on air, off air. but it was exactly what I thought.
Yes.
And actually,
yes, I can
remember of this particular disease there being a very a couple of cases. When I came to Dubai, well, not a couple of cases, but that there were a couple of people who must have had it, and the place they were living was in, it was sort of like almost a shanty area, you know, I'm talking about sitting 1960s, and they went in, they contained the whole area, and they went in, and everyone could not come out unless they were vaccinated.
Wow.
And it didn't go anywhere. It didn't spread. No one was, and people at that time would all have been, generally would have been vaccinated. So the WHO have done an amazing job of actually eradicating this contagious disease.
But the fear is with all of these diseases coming back.
Well, it's in the laboratory.
Since people, you know, there's this whole movement to not vaccinate. And so things like measles and mumps have started coming, emerging
again. Yeah, but
they're
not eradicated.
No, they
aren't
eradicated. But with this, you know, you just...
It was a disease that actually, they were, you know, it was...
There was a very conscious effort. It was a massive
effort. There was absolute, and they sort of narrowed it down and down and down and down. And the last, you know, it has now, as far as I know, I don't think anyone ever now gets a vaccine for this particular contagious disease.
But
it's
that's
gone.
the... Well, that's the issue, isn't it? If you don't have a vaccine, somehow it escapes. If you're not vaccinated, then...
And then we'll start again.
And it'll start again. There'll be, you know...
But so will the process of vaccination. You know,
except for those people who refuse to vaccinate their children. It's a pet peeve that I have.
But now, going back to our
book. I'm obviously intrigued with the question, Shen.
I think I have a pretty good idea what it is now.
Yes,
I'm pretty
okay.
Sure.
So Contagion by Terry is a book aimed at young adults and also those older. And it says on the cover, Contagion, some things can't be cured. Now, I was completely drawn into this because it is three main characters. Tell our listeners a little bit about them, what kind of presence they have in the book. And I was completely fooled about what the potential contagion thing was. You know, I'd gone off on a completely different track.
I was actually, I was fooled as well. Although the book does give you, you know, you do get some hints throughout the book. The main characters are... Callie, and you've seen the blurb of the book. Callie is missing. Her brother Kai is losing hope of ever seeing her again. Then he meets Shay, a girl who saw Callie the day she disappeared, and his hope is reignited. And the whole book is generally switches between Callie, the little girl who's missing, and her story, and Shay, the girl who's the last to see her. And then she meets up with the brother, Callie's brother Kai, and
she sees this piece of paper. It was sort of pinned in one of the shops where she lives, and when Callie went missing, it was a particular day, and then they travelled the next day. So she hadn't
seen it for about a year.
Yes.
And then she sort of sees
it and thinks, my goodness, I saw this girl, and then gets in touch that way. So it was an absolute freak chance that she would have ever picked that little bit of paper up.
And the fact that she had this incredible memory, which is terribly important.
Exactly, it is very important. And there's lots of linkages between the main characters, which you realise afterwards, but you don't.
And I have my suspicions about the doctor, who the doctor makes.
Yes.
But I bet you it's not, because I think it's too...
Do you think it's too obvious?
I think it's too obvious. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
But that's why I'm so cross, because we finished the book and we don't have the answer.
Because there are too many pointers as you read through the book. I think she's an absolutely master or mistress of this kind
suspense,
of thriller.
Isn't she really
suspense.
Did, yeah.
And that's what she wants us to believe. And there is obviously a connection between, I'm sure we all are talking about the same person,
yes,
who could be the doctor, and both Callie and... Shay, which we sort of come to realize as time goes
on. It's one of those books that's really difficult to explain on the radio, because if you go more than three chapters in, you start giving spoiler alerts all the way along. And they keep coming thick and fast.
Yes, they do.
The chapters are very short and punchy, which I really enjoyed.
I thought that was absolutely brilliant, because it keeps the pace up and you get the different voices and you get to sort of feel what the characters are like. And there are subsidiary characters, so there's parents, there's friends, there's other things going on, but there is a lot of science in this book, which
we're questioning the science, to be honest. It's not used in the context that the science would be correct. I think they've taken words and turned them into something
aligned. completely fooled by that shows how poor my scientific knowledge is. I really sort of followed it. I also felt that Terry had done an amazing job of painting the landscape of where this all takes place, that we really felt we were in that part
all
of the world,
Scotland, and going to different places.
Yeah, and the sort of the lock and the sort of the little house on stilts and things like that, which exist. All of those things actually exist, and so that makes it much more grounded in reality.
But also the attention to detail when it comes to practical things, like driving on a gravelly road at night time on the side of a lock. You can almost smell it, can't you? You really get a sense of it.
Where they can't turn any lights on and they can't do things like press the brake light, because in those sort of places, if you did that, it would be seen, you'd stand out like a sore thumb, because it's because of the scenery. And she really has done her research and made sure that for us to believe it, those things have to be there.
I think she must have spent a good amount of time there. I know that she herself lives in Buckinghamshire, in the Chilterns, and so her earlier trilogy, Slated, is based in that area, but she must have spent a good amount of time and, you know,
in the Trossachs and around, yes, around the places around where area. it takes place, the Shetland Isles and so on.
She's a very well-travelled author. She's lived in France, Canada, Australia, England. She does it more addresses than she can account for. Yeah. I like people
she
like
knows
that.
What she wants to be when she grows up. It's the sort of final line of her biography, which I like, because I share that sort of that thing that we never really know what we want to be when we grow up, actually, until right at the, you know, the final day we take a breath and think, yes, you know, this
oh,
is
that
what
was
we
it.
Wanted to do. So I really like her writing. And I really like that relationships are not allowed to actually be too much of this kind
exactly.
of book. Because it can be, I think nowadays there is a danger with young adult fiction that it goes too far. It goes too far, and
absolutely,
you don't know actually what age group are going to be reading this. And with this, it never goes too far.
It's perfectly safe. Yes, I do feel that a lot of young adult dystopian books are actually romances disguised
yes.
as dystopian or science fiction or thrillers. And I like that this is a good old-fashioned thriller. You have a little bit of, you know, the relationship, but it's not overpowering.
No, and it's more about that there are more than, you know, there's the brother and sister, there's the sister and the female, there's different, and her best friend Iona. So there's lots of different types of friendships, which I think young adults could identify with. I think I did where the time's going today, Jenny. I'm going to quickly repeat the quiz question before we go for the break. Thank you for all your answers. Not all right, but lots of them are. So, name one contagious disease that has been eradicated globally. Send in the name of that disease to 4001 and please put your name on the answer. And the lucky winner, who's picked out of the magic sorting hat, will get a copy of Contagion, just published by Terry, our young adult book of the week. But as an adult, I don't know whether I qualify as a young adult, but I absolutely loved it. Come back. We'll be back with you shortly after this break.
Young reviewer, young minds, big ideas.
Welcome back. We're talking about our young adults book of the week, Contagion by Terry. We're getting lots of right answers and some not so right answers. For our quiz question, which is name one contagious disease that has been eradicated globally.
And can I also just bring in the previous question that we had, because people can still answer that one, which is, are science fiction and fantasy fiction different genres, yes or no?
Yes, and all answers, please, to 4001, and please put your name. And if you've got any comments, suggestions, ideas, disagreements, you can text in too. We always love hearing from our listeners out there.
I've got a question. I don't know what you guys think about this, but yes. In the book, each chapter looks like a Scrabble board, doesn't it?
Yes, I
wondered about that. I didn't read anything going through that gave me a hint as to what, I mean, it could either be Scrabble or the periodic table. I'm not quite sure which it
right.
is.
I think it's a periodic table. Yes. You must be quite right. Yeah. I think that's got to be it, because the way it's set up with, like, the, you know, the number and writing at the bottom.
And it's really clever, because what they do, the first few chapters have got a countdown to them. And I was just,
what's going to happen at zero?
which is really manipulative and very, very good. And actually, I was quite glad it did that. I was really happy. And the other thing that it does, which I've enjoyed, is the one chapter from Shay, one chapter from Kelly. Kelly, one chapter from Shay, one chapter from Kelly.
And I believe that the next book is going to have Kai's perspective as well, because at this point, I think in the next book, they'll be a little bit more split up. They won't all be together. So we have to wait till next year.
And it's divided into four parts, isn't it? And it will, if you look.
Yes.
And so part four is the fall. And we have the Xander Multiversed Manifesto, which we don't really get to know too much about that.
There's just a couple of quotes, aren't there?
Yes.
It's very
Once
intriguing.
All possible solutions have been eliminated, the impossible becomes not only possible but probable. I like that. That's
but
deep.
Isn't that Sherlock Holmes, or sort of a re-quote of
it
Sherlock
is.
Holmes?
It is
right?
Sort of that kind of thing. So who is Xander? from the Multiverse Manifesto, because we get his quotes at the beginning of the parts.
And then he's the main voice in the prologue, where he's in 1993 in Desertron, Texas, and that's a particle accelerator. And then something gets out, and then he's left with some different kind of power. So it gives you a bit of a hint into what happens later on in the book.
Yeah, so I want to know what's going to happen with the prologue now. I'm sure one of the books to come will give us something of that.
Oh, yes. I'm almost like, I'm about 95% sure I know who Xander is. And you know, and then we're probably going to see a lot more of him in the next books. But we'll have to find out, won't we?
Yeah, it's been described as being gripping, chilling and unputdownable. And I have to say, I whizzed through this.
Yes, really, really.
Yeah, I forego any work until I finished it. It's one of those.
I read it in one sitting. Yeah, I just needed to
keep going. It is that kind of book. It is a page turner. And I just think that I want to go and read Slated, which has had such great reviews, her yes. other books.
Yes, Slated looks really interesting because I think she's talking about a point set a little time in the future where underage criminals have their memories wiped and they're giving new identities completely. Mm. So they're slated, they, you know, tabula rasa, blank slate. Mm. And then...
There's a short YouTube, a couple of short YouTube videos where you see that happening, where their minds are completely wiped clean.
I would...
That's scary, really.
Yeah, I think that out of a lot of the fantasy fiction that I have read... that is called young adult, I think this one genuinely is.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean, as you said, it doesn't mean that adults can't enjoy it, but I would be very happy recommending this book to any of the teenagers and their parents that came into the library.
Exactly.
Because sometimes I have to say, well, you know, you've got to read it maybe and see what
it
you
could
think.
It could have bad language in it. This has nothing. Yes. It has nothing that I think a teenager, you know, parents of teenagers would be concerned about.
It's very much age appropriate. Yeah. The youngest character, Callie, she's about 11.
Yes.
Shay is about 16.
Kai is probably a little bit older.
Yeah. And then there are obviously a whole lot of supporting characters of all different ages. I liked the fact that you meet all these little characters all the way going through. An old couple who are holding hands, something has happened to them.
And Duncan and Iona. Is it Lowry?
Lockie,
who's... So I'm sure, in a way, I think we're going to hear more of them. I don't think they're just going to disappear. I just get that feeling that...
And there aren't so many characters that you're overwhelmed by the book, which is also...
Yes. Yeah, and you forget who's who. There are enough to get a sense of each of them and get attached to them before something horrible happens.
But I never thought it was the description that we get from Callie, who has obviously had something terrible happen to her. I couldn't work out actually what had happened to her. And I mean, the descriptions are there, but it's sort of...
It's misleading, the
it's
terminology
very,
that's
very
used.
Misleading yeah. as yeah. to what yeah. you sort of imagine may have happened. And again, I think Terry does a brilliant job of keeping the suspense going.
It's deliberately misleading. And I think it's also because you're seeing it through the eyes of a young child who doesn't necessarily recognize what she's seeing. It's only when she repeats that to Shane, who's much older and has had different experiences, that she can... figure out what's really going on here. Mm.
And memory seems to play a very important part in this novel, because if you think about Callie, a lot of her memories have gone. So she's really got to think hard about things that she can remember and certain things she can't remember at all. Mm. And then you get the opposite with
Shay,
because
Shay
remembers everything. Mm. And then because she can't always remember everything right at that moment, there's a bit of mistrust that takes. So there's a lot to do with memory and how you perceive things and what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, the difference between the police and the army and who you can trust and who you can't trust. And yeah, I like that all the way through the book. The characters have to question who they can trust, why they can trust them, and where people are coming from.
Mm. And even down to Callie's necklace, I thought that was a very... clever memory that Shay has,
which we don't know the answer to.
No.
Another cliffhanger.
I know. They are littered about with cliffhangers, and that's why I'm not 100% sure that who we all think is the guilty party is the guilty party, because that would be too, for me, too obvious.
And the other thing is, we don't know if there is a guilty party, because it's one of those, it looks like a lot of terrible things have happened, but we don't know if it was for the greater good or not.
Yeah, and also, where, as you said in the prologue, where it starts in the prologue, they're in Texas.
Yes.
They're not in Scotland. And something, the prologue, something obviously terrible happens there. So how is it, how does that tie in with what we know is going on in Scotland?
Well, we do, and we know going forward, which we haven't seen yet, that definitely this contagion has spread beyond the British Isles.
Yes.
That's the kind of one of the things that happens towards the end that we see. But we don't know where or what that's going to happen with that. And there's just so many little pieces of story that are spreading out for us to sort of get to grips with in the next two books, which come out in 2018.
Yeah, so we'll be on tenterhooks until we get those. So you'd give it a thumbs up.
Oh, I definitely give it a thumbs up. It's very exciting. One of the few that I've, the young adult dystopian novels that I've enjoyed reading more. It gives me a sort of sense of Robin Cook back in the day, some of the stuff that he used to write. Fairly straightforward thrillers, very exciting.
They were medical, weren't they?
All medical thrillers.
Coma, and I used to love those.
Yeah, I remember reading them in school, and, they're just, thriller never really stops, and it's, and they're not stupid either. You don't feel like your brain is sort of melting from the idiocy.
It's quite intelligent. Definitely a page turner. Without a doubt, it's a page turner. I would recommend it for any teen that has a short attention span.
Yes.
Because of the way the chapters are
short
read.
Detention span.
Attention span.
Hopefully
and,
not.
And
detention.
Anyone in detention as well might enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, that really struck me. Is that if you weren't somebody that liked reading for hours and hours, this book would really get you.
Yes. It zooms past.
So I think it's we will definitely be recommending Terry and looking at her other books. She's incredibly popular, and I think she's she's an up and coming, a new name of young adult fiction. And I do love the fact that she's given teenagers, even young teenagers, something they can get their teeth into without it being all about romance, because I think there is a time and a place for that, but actually
yes.
Not in every single blooming book they pick up.
Which is not to say that there isn't some romance in this, but it's appropriate.
It's part of the story. It's not the be all and end all of the story.
Exactly.
And there are
natural.
Different types of there are different types of friendships in there which will be quite normal for teenagers. So I think it's much more balanced than some of the books out there at the moment, which just are sort of just a bit too
sentimental,
saccharine-y, and not real.
Exactly.
This one is a lot more real, actually, in what they do. So we're coming to the end of our young adult book, and Shen, it's always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Always a pleasure to be here.
What are you reading? What else have you got on the go at the moment, apart from Contagion?
Oh gosh, I'm reading tons of stuff. I've got the new Alan Bradley, the Flavia De Luce series.
The new ones that have come out.
There's a new one out in the library, so I've gotten hold of that, and I'm looking forward
to
reading
it. This is a delightful series of books written by a Canadian author who has, I'm sure by now he has, but at the time that he first wrote his books, he'd never even been to England. And the stories are set in England by a young girl. She's, 12, 13 years old?
12, 13, and she's a...
In the 1950s, I think.
She's a chemist and, lives in an old country house, mm-hmm. and... she's obsessed with poisons, and she solves all these murders.
She drives her sister insane, and she's delightful.
She's such a hilarious character. It's fantastic.
Great. Well, that's a great recommendation. So just give us the title again before we go to the break.
Alan Bradley, and the series is the Flavia De Luce series. And,
great.
Yeah, there's several books in it. So
yes, and you can find them in the old library.
Yes.
Great. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be joined with Hind Saeed, for our Arab World slot after this.
Young Reviewer, Young Minds, Big Ideas. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and we are focusing in the next segment on the Arab world and books from the Arab world. And it's a pleasure, as always, to be joined by Hind Syed. Welcome, Hind.
Thank you.
And can you tell us the book that you're going to be telling us about today, which I know is available in translation?
Yes, the book called The 99 Floor. It's written by Jenna Al-Hassan, and it's translated to English in the late 2016. The book was published in Arabic in 2014 and then was longlisted for the International Prize for Arab Fiction in 2015.
And then it got shortlisted, didn't it?
It got shortlisted.
Well, so longlisted, shortlisted. Yes. And I remember meeting her, and you probably did too.
Yes.
Yeah, at the award ceremony in Abu Dhabi. And she's an incredibly outgoing, flamboyant character.
She is, and she's one of the youngest authors now in these days. Also, she was chosen for the 39 Beirut event, being the youngest author
under 40.
Because her earlier book also was the shortlisted for the IPAF when she was like just 25 years old.
Yes, that's incredible.
And yeah, her writing is a bit different. It's she's very has a lot of courage, and she writes about issues maybe at her age people don't write about, this and that. This book in particular, it's about love, about identity, even though she talks a lot about what's happening at that time in Lebanon, but also we can see like the love between Majid and Hilda. They both came from different backgrounds, and they have grown up in a different circumstances, but they met in New York. Each one of them went to New York for a different reason. Majid immigrated to New York with his father to finish his study and to work. Majid has been affected by the events of 1982, so he had a big scar on his face, and he doesn't walk, like probably has injured his leg. Well, she is a dancer, and she likes to dance, and she went to New York to learn to be a professional dancer and also fashion design, because at that time her family didn't want her to be a dancer, so to please her parents, she wants to study fashion design beside that. So they met, and when they met, they fall in love, and he has a lot of issues in him because he had a scar and all that, so he couldn't believe that she fall in love with him with all what he has. But she was a very a free spirit, as they say, that she wanted to live the life. She wanted to experience a life away from her parents, where she came from a very wealthy family, and she was spoiled by her father, but in the same time she was away from everything. She was overprotected, so she didn't know a lot what's happening in life. When she met him, he came from a poor family, and he actually lived his life. And as one of the times she told him that she wanted to feel life, and then she learned a lot about life and about Lebanon and about what happened, the events that happened at that time in the 80s. And she wanted to change. She, as if she discovered herself, So the story starting from 1982 to 2000 and take us between these two years, what happened in 82 and how they grew up, and then in 2000 how they met. It's a very interesting way of also how young people these days are getting out of the family circles, and they're discovering themselves in that in their own way, in their own way, learning.
Circumstances mean they have to leave their homelands, many of them, and they have to settle elsewhere where they don't have the family restrictions on them. Potentially they can just be one of millions living in these big cities in a different culture, a different place, and so there is a sense of freedom from the ties and the restrictions of their more conservative upbringing.
Definitely. And it's a difference for him. He has to leave while she chose to leave. And that's also, you can see the contrast in their life. But then again, that's what is bringing them together also. Until Hilda decided, after 7 years in New York, decided to go back home. And then she was telling him she wants to see, to find herself between there and here. Mm. So she was in a conflict between her life there. She's a spoiled daughter, have everything and she wants it in her life. But again, she has to listen to what her father was saying rather than choosing her life. And that where all the struggle, while he was very scared if she leaves also, that mean he doesn't know that if she comes back, mm. because that her appearance might change because they are from different backgrounds and different way of living. And
so there was a conflict just even about them being friends that obviously is part of the issue that yes. Across the Arab world yes. people might be from different cultures, languages, not languages so much, but
different culture, different standard of living, yes. and different yes. beliefs they have.
Where if they'd stayed where they were, the society was quite rigid, yes. and you would not be moving between yeah. them. But once you've gone elsewhere,
yeah,
it's a completely different case.
And
it's
also that's also the young generation are breaking these rules now, and that's what it showed us. But also they struggle
with their identity. Well, it's interesting. One of the father says, "You abandoned everything completely and were so distant from us, and then all of a sudden you came back wanting simply to hold us accountable." And that is, yes. but that is such an interesting statement to make, because it doesn't just apply within the context of the story. It applies with a lot of the world, a lot of teenagers all who go off and discover themselves, yes, and then come back home. And then they come back with all these ideas and say to their parents, "Well, why did you do this? Yes. Why did you do that?"
And exactly what happened to her, she went back and then she said, "You know, you didn't tell me about this. You lied." While they were protecting her rather than lying, you know, what's happening and why you did that and when you did that. And that's what she wanted to find herself, her own identity, and do what she wants to do.
But isn't that the process of growing up is finding that space between the lies you're told by yes. society and your parents, discovering your own truths and reconciling the two. And once you can reconcile those two peacefully within yourself, then you can say, "I'm a grown up."
Yeah, but also the struggle. She has also struggled because she was like well off in her home country, and like, you know, she lived a beautiful life. She doesn't regret it. But again, if she be by herself, that means she needs to struggle. And that's also the conflict inside her. Will she choose that or choose that? And then she didn't hate her family, but it just, she wanted that part of the freedom to do what she wants. But then tradition, culture, and everything comes to her family, and that's what they want. While with him, he had the freedom, and he chose how he, he lived his life because he was alone.
Did he have that freedom from choice, or because that's just the way, he didn't have a choice? His freedom was not a choice, it was imposed, wasn't it?
Well, it's imposed that he goes to New York, but then at that time his father encouraged him to study, and he's opened his own business, and he's starting being a successful man. But in deep inside, he still feel that he's still struggling with his identity. And when we see that the 99th floor, each one of them have a different idea about the 99th floor. He wanted to be very high, higher in the sky, where, you know, above all the cities, above all the people, while she wanted to be in the street to feel life. Mm. And that's the contrast also with the 99th floor. He always think about the higher places, think he will be high. And also one of the things that also very clear in the book is he kept his scar in his face and his leg as if he wanted to tell people that, you know, I gone through all this. I am, yes, successful. You see my face as success, mm-hmm. but I still have this. As if he's like, he was still, there is a conflict inside him that between his success and between his past.
Well, this physical scar obviously matches the emotional scars that he has inside. So if he gets rid of the physical scar, people do not actually know what suffering he's gone through.
He also afraid that he will forget about it.
Yes.
But he used it in a way in some of the time in the books where he says, I stand in front of the window when the clients come in, where the client couldn't see his face, and he suddenly, you know, turn his face, and the client get shocked about, as if he want to, like, you know, he wants to force them to see that in him.
That's quite a
It's quite telling, isn't it?
It's quite telling about the person that you would want to inflict that on people who actually don't deserve it sometimes. I would say that people who do that, you know, there are disabilities that you have that you can never escape from, but he could have potentially done something about the scar on his face if he wanted to, but he didn't.
He didn't.
It was... he was making a statement, so and the way that he uses it, you know, as you say, facing the window and then turning around and seeing the shock on people's faces. Which is only a natural, you'd sort of, you then are going to start there. You're going to say, oh my goodness, what happened to you? Or exactly. I'm sorry to see.
You can't just
start on just a level playing field. You're immediately drawn into his past.
So through this novel, does he use that to impact other people, or does he use it as a mirror to himself when he sees their reaction to remind him of who he is and
where
he's been?
Well, I think he used it both. He used it as because his father always wanted him to do a surgery, and she also asked him to do. And there is a possibility that he get better, but he says some of the time that he doesn't want to forget if this gone, and also to impose it on other people. Say so the conflict was still inside him about what he. But also he couldn't believe that she loved him with all he has. And the other contrast we see is she's a dancer while he cannot walk properly. Mm. And that's also a lot of conflict. Well, she overcome that and then he couldn't overcome it. He couldn't go and see her dance at the theater because he had this feeling that she's flying while he couldn't, you know, walk also.
He sounds a very damaged human being.
He is, yeah. Well, she was overcoming all that and loved him.
I don't have a feeling this is going to turn out so well at the end. I've not read it yet in translation, but you can.
Well,
I'm
passing judgments on the characters already.
Yes. Well, it's just the fact that and the book, in a way, there's just a reminder of the English patient who is so horribly burnt, and we never. And particularly, I'm thinking of the film. You never see him. Mm-hmm. As he was, you do actually. There's flashbacks, but there is this sort of the nurse who's looking after him manages to find out the history through him, and I'm not saying that it was so much a love story, but it's because he had this amazing passion for this person that, you know, sadly.
But there's also guilt involved, isn't it? Oftentimes, a physical manifestation of something that is a reminder to you of something that you're not proud of, you know.
Yes.
And it seems to me that there's maybe a little bit of that in that character as well.
Well, there is a thing that he has a guilt because at that time his mother died because his dad was taking him to the hospital and the event happened where his mother died, and he always think that.
That's all tied up.
Tied up in his past.
Same as the English patient.
Yes.
There's this guilt that's tied up with the manifestation of their appearance.
Yes. Sophie,
but he has become successful. He's become very successful in his new life.
Yes.
And it's how he can move on. How can he move on and get over the scars, both physical and emotional?
And emotional.
We're going to take a short break and we'll come back to more about The 99th Floor by Jana Fawaz Al-Hassan.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
We are talking about a wonderful, wonderful book Hind has brought to our attention, and luckily it is available in translation. It is 99th Floor by Jana Fawaz Al-Hassan. And whilst we were off air, Hind was giving us a few of the sort of leads to how it ends, and it's a very political book.
It's a very political,
and it covers real history, but it's fiction, and it's really you are reliving that history through the characters who are very real, and very damaged. And that's the kind of, you know, flawed human beings, which we were talking about earlier, which and actually are believable.
And it seems flawed resolutions throughout the book, as would you would have in real life.
Yes.
Nothing's neat and tidy.
Yes. And what I like in this book is different from other books talking about that period of life is she talks about the characters, about their feeling. And those young people who were not like taking part of that, they were very young at that time. So they learned information about it from their parents, and they didn't live it. Like, they lived it, but, I mean, they were not adults enough to live it, to understand what it is. And that's where the second generation of those people who lived at that 1982, and then how they feel about it, how they struggle about it. And also about him as a Palestinian who never lived in Palestine. He always lived outside Palestine. But
in
he is
the
very,
refugee camps.
In the refugee camps, and then went back to New York. But he's very attached to it. But his information, it all came from other people and from his father.
The theme-wise, it's provoking, thought-provoking theme-wise.
Yes,
And with a lot of depth, it seems to me, a lot of depth in terms of the themes, in terms of the characters, in terms of resolution. I mean, it's just a very complicated book.
It is very complicated. And that's why it's a very strong book in it. That's why it's shortlisted
for the International Prize for Arabic.
Yes, because... and especially she's very young, and as if she's still telling us about those characters from her point of view, because she is also younger, she's less than 30.
And she's Lebanese.
She's Lebanese.
And the thing is that I think the whole thing for me is fascinating, because you can look at so many books of fiction that tell a point of view based on history, and I say that in inverted commas, because history is what you've been told.
Yes.
You were not there, you've maybe not witnessed it yourself, but you grow up with, well, this was what happened and that what's happened. And you take the, you know, if you take the examples of the world wars and the different histories that we will have as the reality, and maybe they're not the reality. And I think, again, she covers this, the author covers this very well, that there are different histories from every place, depending on which side you're on, depending on who's told you, depending on the what has happened to you personally or to your family, that will colour your whole judgment.
It's exactly as you said. I mean, it's history written and told by different people. And for both of them, they learned history from their parents, from other people. They didn't live
it. So it's their personal history which they're questioning, not just the greater context of the world around them.
History is so subjective. It is so subjective to who is telling it and what... what you remember of it.
Definitely.
I was reading an article very recently from The Economist where they talk about the fact that we're almost getting to the point, because there is so much information out there and because of this whole thing with fake news and all the rest of it, that we're almost at a point where the information that you have is going to land up coming from verbal clues rather than from the newspaper and from what's written down, because it's just so fragmented and there are so many truths out there or non-truths or you know, so your impressions are going to become very important depending on who you mix with.
And that's true. I mean, that's what I love these books, because I mean the authors always they tell us from their point of view or the point of view of people, but there, as you say, there's so many news that sometimes it's not true, people say it. And these kind of telling you exactly how things happen to each part of the people, side of the people, like, or the culture, how it's happened and how they feel about it. And that's it's where she met him. She didn't know how other people feeling about this, whether things happen. And also when he heard her stories, he didn't know that, you know, this is how it's happened. And so as if they both get into each other's side and learned from each other. It's a very, very good story to know more about, and especially people who still have this in their mind, thinking of the other part of the other culture where they didn't know information about it.
And I think it is a really important way to understand that there are always two sides to any story, any and that we must never lose sight of that, that history depends on the veracity of those that are telling us. But there, you have to look at both sides. You have to understand, you know, what drives people on either side of any kind of conflict. And this was a terrible conflict. We are talking about The 99th Floor by Jana Fawaz al-Hassan, a young Lebanese writer who Hind has absolutely loved this book. And it also has a stamp of approval from the International Prize for Arabic Fiction and is available in translation from Interlink. So you can read it in the original Arabic or in translation. I'm going to quickly repeat our quiz question for listeners who may just have joined the show, and you will be in the draw to become a lucky winner if you get the answer right and your name is picked. So, is fantasy a different genre to science fiction? It's a simple yes or no answer, and send your answers into 4001 and please put your name. Name one contagious disease that has been eradicated globally. Again, 4001 for your answers and put your name. And the lucky winner for that question will get a copy of Contagion, a just published young adult book, but also very suitable for adults too. Terry, and which Penny, Shen, and I absolutely love.
Can I just say, I've got to say something about Jana Fawaz al-Hassan.
Yes.
I got a little quote which I thought was delightful. I don't know if you came across it, where she says that she started her career as a teenager ghostwriting love letters for her friends. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, she's very, very, very nice personality. And
very,
she's
outgoing.
Outgoing. Yes. And I remember we talked to her about this book and the other book where she actually write more about relationships. And then she's saying, like, how people ask her how she knows about these things. And then she said, you know, I read books. I know this is not necessarily I am in a relationship, but I know about these things. Yeah, mm. I mean, she's very funny personality, yeah.
Yes, and I think she's writing in a different way, a different style. And I think young writers are now coming through. We found the winner of this year's Arabic Prize for Fiction.
Yes.
Again, it's a very young writer, Mohammed Hassan Alwan, with A Small Death, which everyone is raving about. I'm desperate to read it in translation.
There are very few, like, new writers, like Mohammed Hassan Alwan. We had Mohammed Rabir, who came to the festival last year, and his book is also now
and
in translation.
And, of course, the wonderful Saoud El-Sanoussi, the young Kuwaiti writer.
Yes.
So it's great to see that as a result of the Arabic Prize for International Fiction, plus other prizes, that young writers are now taking heart and they're really, you know, upping their game.
And then the good thing is translated to English, so the people can read about this and understand their point of view from this side of the world. That's
which
is
was not happening in the way that it should in terms of getting Arabic fiction out into English fiction.
Yes.
Thank you as ever, Hind, for being part of today's Talking of Books.
Thank you for having
me. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be talking about our book of the week, which is Nobody Told Me by Holly McNish. Do stay tuned. We'll be back with you shortly.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.